We are so thankful for the opportunity to be here. We have very fond memories of being here. Millard Showalter would give us a pretest when a math test was coming up. And we worked together to solve some of the problems for that pretest, and that began problem solving together. We also have fond memories of attending Elkton Mennonite Church, where we learned to know Orville and Dorothy Schenck, which I haven't seen them here, but they may be here. Oh, there, okay, good. Yes. And Richard and Elsie are friends that were in school with us. They were in our wedding. And Roman and Elva are part of our family. Dean Welty also lives here. I don't see him, but he may be here. He and I were in youth group together in northern Indiana. And Lorene Schrock was in an adjoining youth group, and we also did a sabbatical in Wisconsin at Elwood and Lorene's place. Oh, I can't miss Roland Jr. and I were interns at Phil Haven at the same time, where Roland Sr. was CEO.
Well, during our college days, Dr. Laban Peachy taught developmental psychology. And when we got to the senior years, we asked him, why are some older people a delight and others are first-class grumps? He took his King James Version, which was, of course, what we used in those days, and he began reading in Psalm 90. We spend our years as a tale that is told. The days of our years are 80 years and 10, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. He closed the Bible and then said some words that I've never forgotten. He said, "You will be what you now are, only more so. So work on it."
I'm going to have to learn how to use this thing.
Is it working?
Yes. It's never too late to begin working on becoming the person God is calling you to be in this season of life. We will encounter challenges along the way, spiritually, emotionally, physically, and financially. C.S. Lewis said, "Hardships often prepare an ordinary person for an extraordinary destiny."
Tony Snow was such a person. He started out as an editor of a small town newspaper, and then progressed to Good Morning America, went on to become a journalist with Fox News, and reached the pinnacle of his career as the press secretary for President George W. Bush. He was a highly articulate person, but just 2 years into his job as the press secretary, he was diagnosed with terminal colon cancer, and he could have become bitter and said, "God, you did me wrong." But listen to what he said just months before he died at the age of 53. He said, "God relishes surprises. We want to live lives of simple, predictable ease, smooth, even trails, as far as the eye can see. But God likes to take us off-road. He provokes us with twists and turns, but by his love and grace, we persevere." He concluded by saying, "The mere thought of death somehow makes every blessing vivid, every happiness more luminous and intense. We may not know how our contest with illness will end, but we have felt the ineluctable touch of God."
The senior season of life puts us at a crossroads, like when we were young adults, making decisions about vocation, location, singleness versus marriage, finances, and so on. In the last quarter century of our lives, as in all of our life, we have the option of becoming the person God is calling us to be. Our lives are like a tale that is told, or like a stream. We'd like you to watch the screen as we show a short clip from Soul Keeping DVD by John Ortberg.
There once was a town high in the Alps that straddled the banks of a beautiful stream. The stream was fed by springs that were as old as the earth and as deep as the sea. The water was clear like crystal. Children laughed and played beside it. Swans and geese swam. You could see the rocks and the sand and the rainbow trout that swarmed at the bottom of the stream. High in the hills, far beyond anybody's sight, lived an old man who served as kind of keeper of the stream. He had been hired so long ago that now no one could remember a time when he wasn't there. He would travel from one spring to another in the hills, removing branches or fallen leaves or debris that might pollute the water. But his work was unseen. One year, the town council decided they had better things to do with their money. Nobody supervised the old man anyhow. They had roads to repair and taxes to collect, services to offer. Giving money to an unseen stream cleaner had become a luxury they could no longer afford. So the old man left his post. High in the mountains, the springs went untended. Twigs and branches, and worse, muddied the liquid flow. Mud and silt compacted the creek bed. Farm waste turned parts of the creek into stagnant bogs. For a time, nobody in the village noticed. But after a while, the water was not the same. It began to look brackish. The swans flew away to live somewhere else. It no longer had that crisp scent that drew children to play by it. Some of the town began to grow ill. Everybody noticed the loss of sparkling beauty that used to flow between the banks of the stream that fed the town. You see, the life of the village depended on the stream, and the life of the stream depended on the keeper. So the city council reconvened, the money was found, the old man was rehired. After yet another time, the springs were clean, the stream was pure, and children played again on its banks. And illness was replaced by health. The swans came home. The village came back to life. The life of the village depends on the health of the stream. The stream is your soul, and you are the keeper.
The stream is your soul, and you are the keeper.
Is that what you wanted? Where do you want?
Dallas, our soul is like a stream.
Whoops.
There. Thank you.
Sorry. So the stream is your soul and you're the keeper. Dallas Willard in The Renovation of the Heart says, our soul is like a stream of water which gives strength, direction, and harmony to every other area of our life. When that stream is as it should be, we are constantly refreshed and exuberant in all we do. What is the soul? When John Ortberg asked Dallas Willard that question, Dallas answered by drawing concentric circles. He said, the will is your capacity to choose, to exercise dominion. The mind, our thoughts and feelings. The body enables our behaviors from tying shoes to driving cars. And the soul is the capacity to integrate all the parts into a single whole life. It's something like the program of a computer that runs a computer. You don't usually notice it unless it messes up. Now, there are other definitions of a soul, but we're using Dallas Willard's. And I've added to it, every decision and every action develop the soul, which we will eventually present to God.
Now, if you're an author, you know that the last chapters in a book are very, very important. And so it is with the last chapters of our lives. We are living a tale that is told, and day after day we write chapter after chapter after chapter. In a book, each chapter hinges on the previous one with a stream of thought. And in our lives, we are the keeper of that stream, the keeper of our soul. We can let that stream get muddy and filled with the trash around us.
H.B. London, in a talk which he entitled The Need to Flee, talked about the many, many church leaders that called Focus on the Family. He said every day another pastor or church leader either called or somebody called about them, saying that they had let down their guard, had fallen into sin. And so he was strongly encouraging us to be very careful to not fall into temptation. Our spiritual lives are part of tending that stream, keeping our lives clean, refreshing for us and those who follow behind us is absolutely critical. We can become a stagnant pond or a fresh flowing stream. Many seniors are tempted to buy the myth of the generation gap, that they have nothing left to share with the younger set. But I like what Psalm 145:4 says, "Let each generation tell its children of your mighty acts. Let them proclaim your power."
You know, we like to convey as part of our legacy to the next generation the spectacular kinds of power. But sometimes we fail to see the loving hand of God in ordinary people. My parents were ordinary people who lived next to a little girl in Mississippi. She was the youngest child in a poverty-stricken family. Now, fast forward 50 years. Not long ago, I received a phone call from my great niece, Judith. She and her husband are church planters in Dearborn, Michigan. And they found that evangelism, they live in the midst of a community of Muslim immigrants. And they're finding that evangelism can be really hard work and slow work in that setting. But as Thanksgiving approached last year, they decided, along with another church in the area, that they would sponsor a Thanksgiving meal with their Muslim neighbors. And Judith walked in to help set up that meal. And as she did so, she was introduced to the food coordinator of the other church. And she was introduced by another woman, and she simply said, "Connie, this is Judith from a neighboring church. And, oh, by the way, she's a Mennonite." And Connie said, "Once upon a time, I knew some Mennonites." And Judith said, "Oh, who? Where?" She was in the Mennonite mode, right? And she said, "You would never know them. It was a long time ago. It was in Mississippi." And she said, "Where?" And she says, "Oh, it was this little podunk town called Macon." And she said, "Well, just try me. I know some people in Macon." And then Judith took a deep breath and she said, "Could it possibly have been Dan and Fanny Borntrager?" Connie gasped. "Yes," she said. "When I was about 9 or 10 years old, I'd go over and Ms. Fanny would let me help her do whatever she was doing, whether it was cleaning or peeling potatoes or baking bread. And while we were working together, Ms. Fanny told me all about Jesus." And she said, there were times when we had no food. And Mr. Dan and Ms. Fanny fed us. And she said, that's how I became a believer. By then, Judith said, we were both crying and hugged each other because Judith said, Ms. Fanny was my great-grandmother. Judith concluded that if my great-grandmother could share her faith as a homemaker, so can I. What a spiritual legacy I have been given. When we're tending our spiritual stream, you see, we begin to see how our story and God's story fit together. We develop perspective. We begin to see that the life that I now have, as God sees that life. Ann Voskamp, in her book, 1,000 Gifts, which some of you may have read, it's a New York Times bestseller, says, how my eyes see perspective is my key to enter into his gates. If my inner eye has God seeping up through all things, then can't I give thanks for the good things, the hard things, the absolute everything? I can enter the gates of glory.
I have a client who repeatedly says she does not believe in God. She says, at age 88, I know I'm soon going to die. And she's very anxious and has no happiness or joy. She just cannot understand how her life and God can intersect, or chooses not to. And yet she keeps coming back to spontaneously saying that she does not believe in God. So I suspect the Holy Spirit keeps nudging her. John Ortberg says, God shows up in our lives again and again, not just in a garden surrounded by serenity and beauty, but he also shows up in the most difficult, painful moments, in personal care, locked intervention units, skilled nursing, hospitals, cancer units, and even in hospice.
Our spiritual lives often flow right into our emotional lives, and both streams need tending. As Americans, we come prepackaged with some basic assumptions that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? But we all know that happiness can evaporate in a moment, depending on the circumstances. But our joy needs to be based on a trust in an omniscient God, even in the midst of pain. Ann Voskamp, speaking out of horrific childhood pain, said, while I may not always feel joy, God asks me to give thanks in all things, because he knows that the feeling of joy begins in the action of thanksgiving. Ann understood that when we change our sad perspective into that of thanksgiving, that the feeling of joy will catch up as we tend our emotional stream.
By the time we reach retirement, we begin to swim upstream in the mighty river of loss and grief. The many losses of declining health, losing our driver's license, our previous home, friends, spouse, all of these things impact us emotionally. Dot Landis, MSW, teacher of loss and grief, defines loss as being... Loss as being without something one has had and valued. Grief is an individual's response to loss. She lists categories of loss. Loss of significant persons by relocation or illness or accident or death or divorce. Loss of part of self, perhaps even physical structural parts of our body. Loss of physical function, such as vision or ability to walk. Psychological losses, when self-esteem takes a dip and we develop depression or anxiety. Social loss of roles such as parenting or job or retirement. Cultural losses may happen when a person retires or moves to a different part of the country. Loss of external objects through downsizing or theft or accident. Developmental losses. With every developmental stage, we experience some loss. For example, infants leaving the womb, or kindergartners going to school for the first time, or graduation, or marriage, or retirement. Each stage, we have gains, but we also have losses.
Loss is having a piece ripped out of your quilt. But grief is repairing that quilt, says Dot Landis. Losses are often felt by senior singles, and the result can be a deep loneliness. According to Google, in 2017, 45.2% of U.S. of persons in the U.S., 18 years old and older, were single. But by 2019, that has risen to approximately 50% of adults are either single or single again.
Men are fixers, and especially fixers of loneliness. An older man in our Sunday school class told us some years ago that when he was young, his father told him, think ahead to temptations that may come along and decide ahead of time what you're going to do in that situation. He said sometime later, he was pretty far from home, where there are other people that were away from their homes as well, and a young woman wanted him to spend the night with her. His decision was easy because he had decided ahead of time what he would do. Many years later, his wife died. He became very lonely, and he developed a relationship with a widow lady. Now this relationship in many ways resembles that of a marriage relationship. He didn't maintain appropriate boundaries. It reminds me again of what H.B. London said when he was speaking to 7,000 Christian counselors and pastors, saying seniors at the end of life tend to let down their guard and fall into sin. We need to have strong enough boundaries for ourselves and for the other person whose boundaries may not be strong enough.
Donald Joy, in his research in the Bonding series, says that we have the tendency that when one relationship ends, we pick up the next relationship where the previous relationship ended. But that will deprive the person of the foundational stages that you need to build a healthy relationship. The problem is compounded, especially among seniors, if a new relationship is begun too soon and the grief process is not yet over. We have a close friend who rushed to fix his loneliness and rushed into the next relationship. Today, 12 years after his remarriage, he is still double bonded. Bonded to wife number one, plus to wife number two. There is scarcely a conversation with him that he does not, in some way, refer to his first wife. Tim and Beverly LaHaye, in their book, The Act of Marriage After 40, advise a 1 to 3 year wait after losing a spouse before even thinking about beginning a new relationship.
Now, it's not wrong to remarry, but if we do, we need to learn to love the new person and put the previously married person to the back of our mind and emotions. Remarriage is not a betrayal of the first spouse, but it's creating a new love for the new spouse. If a person chooses to remain single, we're not saying it's wrong to develop special friendships with persons of the opposite gender, but we are saying do so with caution. Many are choosing to have friends with benefits. I say don't ruin your relationship with God and your witness in this way. The soul which we will present to God is developed by our day-to-day keeping of the stream of our lives.
Now, there are healthy alternatives and antidotes to senior loneliness, which helps keep the rest of our days the best of our days. Volunteering, keeping your mind sharp, developing your creativity, and pursuing healthy relationships are all positive ways to do this. Going back to volunteering, as you heard earlier, there must be a myriad options. At least if VMRC is like Landis Homes, you can volunteer all day long if you wish. We have the opportunity to serve as grand pals. Hinkletown Mennonite School, once a month, brings their fourth graders and their fifth graders onto our campus so that we can relate to our grand pal. And it's just been a delightful, I had the best grand pal of, you know, 60 children or whatever it is. We also need to keep our minds sharp. And the Elder Exchange is just one way of doing this. You might want to learn to speak a new language. You are not too old. Or you might want to write a book. Not long ago, I published the book, He Knows the Way. It's a book written portraying a two-year slice of our lives. And it's primarily about the time that I spent in Mississippi among the Choctaw Indian Nation, which is a peaceful tribe in eastern Mississippi. It's a story with the message that love is stronger than hate. And the second message is that He knows the way that we take, and when He has tried us, we will come forth as gold. It is based on historical fact. Historical facts that were happening in Mississippi in the 1960s when we experienced a severe civil rights upheaval. But having been caught once in the crossfire of racial violence, I had no desire whatsoever to meet the Ku Klux Klan twice. And so I chose fiction to convey the story. Since it is autobiographical, I used some protective measures. I changed names, locations, characters, and even a few situations, using artistic license when it came to timing and the nature of the events, in order to protect family and friends. He Knows the Way, which there are books over there, in a nutshell, is simply the story of a young Northern Mennonite nurse that I've named Ellen. She was transplanted from an integrated northern town to a volatile, segregated south. When she teaches English as a second language to the Choctaw chief's daughter-in-law, it raises the ire of her white boss man. This was Mississippi in the summer of 1965. Miles out on Choctaw Ridge, a sharecropper boss man's pickup came barreling toward Ellen Yoder in the opposite lane, carrying three white men with farmers' hats pulled down over their faces. The hats obscured their identities. The obvious display of guns was unnerving, but despite the 98-degree weather, she shivered. They must be going out to hunt wild pigs. She turned left at the Forest Road intersection, where lush green kudzu vines line deep roadside ditches on either side. This takes some dexterity. The first shack was Will and Shonia Tatum's. Pulling into the rutted driveway, she parked her sporty silver VW Beetle. Gathering her purse and her English as a second language teaching materials, Ellen glanced into her rearview mirror. The man in the battered red pickup had turned around, followed her, and were now parked crosswise in the road. Her skin went clammy and the muscles in her neck tightened. 300 feet away, the truck blocked her return route to Missoula. The three of them in their dirty t-shirts and jeans, cigarettes dangling from the corners of their mouths, stood beside the truck and stared at her. Each held a shotgun, barrel to the ground, but it would only take a second for them to aim the guns at her. Their anger and resentment reached across the distance like a bolt of electricity as they glared at her through their hatred. Once more, she glanced into the rearview mirror. Ellen was certain she saw one of the men brandish his gun at her. Were they merely trying to intimidate her? Or did they plan to do away with her, like the Ku Klux Klan had eliminated 3 civil rights workers last summer? Goosebumps snaked up her arms. With no means of communicating for help, how will Ellen make it back to Missoula? Now, you may not have lived through the chaos of Mississippi in the 1960s, but you have lived, and you have a legacy to leave. One way to keep your mind sharp is to write the story that lies within you, just waiting to be written. Discover and nurture your creativity, whether it's writing or art or music or creating cards or woodworking or gardening or maybe even the Senior Olympics. Do you have Senior Olympics around here? If not, create some. Reach out to healthy relationships with adequate boundaries.
In making the rest of our days the best of our days, we need to meet emotional challenges. When physical problems develop, it can muddy the stream of our emotions. A significant number of seniors become depressed and anxious. In the book, Making Rounds with Oscar, Dr. David Dosa quotes one of his patients as saying, "Every day I sit here and wait. I wait for someone to help me get dressed. I wait for breakfast, then for lunch. After that, it's back to my room for a nap or some stupid soap or talk show on TV. Then I wait for dinner. When I was young, I never had time. Now all I have is time." I had a client with numerous health issues. He was thinking that he was at the end of life and all washed up and became very, very anxious. I was able to give him hope and to help him deal with his anxiety. Relieved his distress in 3 sessions, he was back to volunteering and other activities that gave him meaning. Transitions are inevitable, and making transitions as we are older and have less energy sometimes taxes one's emotional resources. Some transitions are predictable, others come as a total surprise. Idella's cardiac arrest at age 46 was one of those total surprises for us. She was feeling totally useless, and while in cardiac rehab, she said, "I can't do anything." So I reminded her, "You have value for who you are, not just for the things you can do." Yes. The messages we believe have power over us, but we also have power over the messages we choose to believe. I often encounter patients with unrealistic self-talk messages that they run through their mind. Some say, "I can do what I always did. Don't tell me I can't drive." There are 2 problems that feed some of these things. One is we remember the things that we used to be able to do and assume that we still can, even if we can't. I have a patient who says, "If they would just allow me to get out of this wheelchair and walk, I could walk." But his wife says he hasn't walked for 2 years, but he still believes that he can. Another problem is that, as someone said, the older we get, the more of a tendency we have to be committed to our way of doing things. It's a nice way to say it. We need to work at being more flexible. Some people live in the if-onlys. If only I could go back to my cottage or my apartment, then I could do what I used to do. If-onlys keep people from enjoying the present. Many others say, I just want to be happy. And I've found that most of the time, the persons whose main objective is to be happy are usually the most unhappy people, because there are many things that threaten our happiness. And for them, anything that threatens their happiness threatens their main reason for living, leading them to be quite unhappy. Another unhelpful way of coping with losses is to just retreat and to isolate yourself. It has major repercussions. One study said that isolating and not being involved with other seniors, other social interactions, has the same health effect as the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes per day. I have a depressed patient who insists that things that help other people don't work for her. She goes to bed, she eats a meal, or goes to physical therapy or whatever, and returns to bed. Whatever she has to do, she does. The rest of the time she spends, or did spend in bed until just the last week or two now. And her nephew supported her in these unhealthy actions. When we isolate ourselves, we become a stagnant pond instead of a refreshing, flowing stream. About a month ago, a social worker called me with a referral for a woman who was very anxious and had had a panic attack. I called to make an appointment. Her son was there, answered the phone, turned to his mother and said, "You don't want to follow through with counseling, do you?" She agreed with him and didn't schedule an appointment. We have the option of living with the debris in our stream or accepting the help that's available.
We also need to be aware of the emotional needs of family members and caregivers, as well as our own. Dr. Dosa says it's hard to see someone who looks like your parent or your spouse, but has lost so much of what made them the person you used to know. It's especially difficult when one needs a higher level of care than the other. There are four typical reactions for family and caregivers. It's fear, guilt, anger, and all of the above. You know, sometimes we're afraid that we won't get well, or that our loved one is going to suffer. Or we may be afraid of the future. I've heard women in particular say, "I just can't make it on my own." Or you may feel guilty because you can't do everything that needs to be done for your loved one. Or you may be wrestling with guilt over unresolved relationship issues. Or, "I promised I would never put my loved one in a retirement community or skilled nursing care." Often there's anger at the situation, there's anger at God, or at any slight or failure of the caregivers. Denial often comes out as anger, and then some deal with all of those issues. Dr. Dosa mentioned that when one leaves through death or dementia or a debilitating illness, it is like being left holding the string of a kite with the kite gone. Families struggle most with letting go. They want them back like they used to be so badly. And coming to terms with that knowledge is the most difficult part of dealing with it.
The stress of caregiving, along with the anticipating the loss or death of a loved one, often takes its toll. Self-care is very important. So for the caregiver, take breaks, get out of the house, maintain healthy relationships with other caregivers of your gender, with couples, with groups of both genders. And during stressful times, we need to be especially careful to maintain the integrity of your marital relationship. When dealing with a person with memory loss, be aware of the common client belief that somebody has stolen their belongings. Now, some people do pick up things that belong to other people, but many times what happens is the person hides something so they can be sure to keep it and then forget where they hid it. That's a common referral I get. Also be aware that persons with seeming cognitive decline may have temporary chemo fog or confusion following a death or a loss. Be careful not to overdiagnose. During those stressful times, it's best to offer help with transportation and other kinds of things. Otherwise, if one says, okay, now they're demented, they are no longer safe to drive, they may lose their license, and then after the grief passes, they would be able to drive safely again, but they've lost their license. Also, in relating to persons with dementia, don't try to convince them of reality when they're already too demented to be able to be reasoned with. One woman said, "My husband is coming to see me this afternoon." Now, her husband had died 10 years prior to that. In the past, therapists would have been told, orient her to reality. But all that would have done in this case was to agitate the woman, and she would have started grieving all over again for her husband, who had been gone for a long time. Instead, try to go for the message underneath her statement and validate what she is feeling. You might say something like, "You're really missing your husband." And that will help her to feel heard and understood, and you don't need to tell her that her husband won't be coming. Normalize difficulty with word finding or other difficulties. Try not to make the person feel bad. Assist them with organizing their day. Sometimes lists help, sometimes they lose their lists.
Some caregivers joke about a cognitive decline, but it's not a joke to the person who is dealing with that issue. Mary Carolyn Davies says it so well. And she said, "If I had known what troubles you were bearing, what griefs were in the silence of your face, I would have been more gentle and more caring and tried to give you gladness for a space. I would have brought more warmth into the place. If I had known. If I had known what thoughts despairing drew you, why do we never understand? I would have lent a little friendship to you and slipped my hand within your lonely hand and made your stay more pleasant in the land. If I had known."
Physical transitions. We may encounter significant changes as we age. And there are two cultural mindsets. Evelyn Driver in Reinventing Aging says the first extreme is everything wrinkles, sags, droops, dries up, stops moving. The second extreme is if you follow all the nutritional and exercise protocols for the 55 and older, you will be eternally young and function as a healthy 25-year-old. Both of these are extremes.
But there's a beautiful portrait in Psalm 92 of the inner person of an aging individual. "The righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like a cedar of Lebanon planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green, proclaiming, 'The Lord is upright. He is my rock. And there is no wickedness in him.'" It's a distinct picture of an older person engaged in making a contribution to his or her world.
But But changes do happen. Some happen gradually, and some can happen in an instant. Franklin Graham, in Living Beyond Limits, says when he's flying from one point to another and he's running low on fuel, he will call ahead and say he needs to make a quick turn. He uses that word picture to describe the fact that people often have sudden changes that happen in their lives.
A quick turn happened in our lives in 97, but it was also a time when God called ahead for us. Emery's neuromuscular system was attacked by a fast-moving virus called Guillain-Barré syndrome. Now, Guillain-Barré virus usually moves from the feet and moves toward the head. And once it hits the diaphragm, it's all over unless you're on a ventilator. Well, as he began to be paralyzed, starting from the bottom and moving up, he was in excruciating pain. And within a 5-day period, he was totally incapacitated. He had only 30% of his lung capacity left. And the neurologist came in and wrote the order for the ventilator. But even though Emery's speech at that point was very slurred, I could understand, and he asked to be anointed. And as the men gathered from church, gathered around him and began to pray, you know, when you pray, you shut your eyes. But I sensed some kind of movement. And I opened my eyes, and I saw him very painstakingly go like this and flick away a tear. Movement that I hadn't seen in days. That was a Friday night, and by Sunday we stood him at the bedside. Now, we were all hanging on to him, all right. But it was a time when God called ahead. It was a long road back. Cognitively, Emery knew what was happening, but he needed, once again, to learn to breathe, to swallow, to blink his eyes, to talk, to walk. So what you see today is truly a miracle of God.
It required a total redefinition of who I was. Once I was strong, in fact, I was quite a bit stronger than most guys my age. But while I was laying there in the hospital bed, I was too weak even to pray. But I dealt with tape cards saying that people were praying for me on the hospital wall. And Dr. Ahn, the head of the rehab department at St. Joe's Hospital, where I was working part-time doing consults there, had sent me a small floral arrangement in a little red wicker basket, which she put on the windowsill. So I'd lay there in bed, look at the cards, and look at the basket. Knowing that people were praying, it gave me hope. As I was learning to walk again, I realized that I'd lost my strength. I had to ask myself, who am I? Because I no longer was who I used to be. I once had a client with significant issues. He said, I have one question for you. Do you have any idea what you're talking about, or is all this just book learning? GBS certainly increased my sensitivity, and in fact, one of the women who worked in the rehab center at the hospital sent me a get well card and wrote in the card, some people go to great lengths to understand their patients. Later, while I was in physical therapy, recovering from a rotator cuff's tear, I saw a man who was barely able to even do the very basic exercises. He was wearing his military cap. And at the nursing home, there was a man who had 3 model airplanes on his dresser. He said, while I was in the Air Force, I flew each of those planes. Both of those guys were trying to hang on to their past identity, to their sense of who they are. John Ortberg says, significance is about who we are before it is about what we do. And that's true But it's also true that what we do is important, and caregivers and others need to be careful to protect that fragile thread to the past.
We're running out of time. So very quickly, another transition that many of us experience, and that is an economic transition. You know, the income that was once ours may not be the same income in post-retirement. And for those who are able to maintain a pre-retirement lifestyle, sometimes an insidious air of superiority can surface. But that pollutes the stream of our soul and the soul of others. People would probably say, I'm not a proud person, and I would never look down on someone else. But there are times when the haves convey an air of superiority to the lesser haves, and we need to be aware of that. We also need to pay attention to the financial awareness of one's spouse. Can they manage? If I would not be able, or if Emery would not be able, can we take care of the financial aspects of our relationship? If we're physically unable to care for our spouse, social workers are usually there to help us. And the current statistics tell us that 87% of seniors prefer to age in place. And that may be an option for us. But when we need a higher level of care, we need to be willing to do that.
In making the rest of our days the best of our days, we need to prepare for the end of life challenges. What is your focus? What is the condition of your stream? What kind of soul are you creating to present to God? Remember, the life of the village depends on the health of the stream. The stream is your soul, and you are the keeper. The rest of your days will have challenges, but if we tend our soul well, maintain an appropriate relationship with God, with ourselves, and with those in our environment, we can say with Helen Marshall, look up and live. This business of living was meant to be more than plodding along each day, with head bowed down and eyes on the ground, while time ticks the hours away.
God made this world a delightful place with beauty everywhere. The grass, the flowers, the trees, the sky, the tang of clean, fresh air.
A world to be lived in, laughed in, loved, to be met with joy and zest. A world with a challenge for each of us to give it our very best.
This business of living was never meant as a treadmill sort of thing.
There are rivers to cross and mountains to climb, and glorious songs to sing.
We have two respondents who will share briefly their reflections on what we heard this evening, and then following that we'll have some time for question and answer from the audience. Very briefly, the two respondents are part of our own, and so we've asked Ray Ramquist, who was a former professor, administrator, and now lives at Park Gables, to respond first. Following him will be Roland Schenck, who was a former hospital administrator and is a resident of Park Place. Incidentally, both of these, although we didn't say this, they're doctors in some fashion. They have PhDs. Ray and then Roland.
Well, that was very good. I agree with what was said, and I'm glad I didn't do what I was planning to do, which was to come up with a list of things to do. Over the past few weeks, I came up with points to tell you about what to do. I did some reading and thinking and talking to people. I've listened to them, and I agree with everything they said. So what was I going to do? The Holy Spirit told me. He told me yesterday, tell them about you and tell them about me. So I scrapped most of what I had written. And let me tell you, I did not know the Lord when I was a young man. I found him, or at least he found me, when I was in my early 20s. Looking back now on my life, I can now see he was with me the whole time. I just didn't know it. I learned to try and control my tongue. I learned that when my tongue was against what the word said, a sword went through me. I learned my tongue steers me and is very, very powerful. That brings me to here and now. How did we get here, my wife and I? We made this decision to change our life and come to VMRC. We said we are going to go. And our Lord brought it about without a hitch. In a few words, it was God's plan. For me, one of the great things about getting older is the perspective of being able to look back at my life and recognize how God helped me in my career, helped me to save time for retirement, helped me to find my wife, and helped me to know when to retire, and helped me to come here. It gave me a great amount of confidence that my Lord had only good in store for me. I am now in my later years of life, and I say the words from a hymn. Here I am, Lord. They are guiding words to me, but particularly to me at VMRC. Here I am, Lord. It is I, Lord. I've heard you calling in the night. I will go, Lord, if you lead me. I will hold your people in my heart. I'm here because God wants me here for some reason. And through the Holy Spirit guiding me, I will find that reason, and I'm in the process, and I will find joy, more joy than I already have. These last days of my life are the best days of my life, because my Lord has told me this. And ever since I came here, I've experienced it. By the way, one of the things that is neat about this place is everybody knows your name. Harold Lehman, in his book, In Praise of Leisure, said, a Christian is in the service of God to be a bearer of love and a servant to his neighbor. I try to not live in the past or live in the future. I just plan the future. I live today. After all, this is the day that the Lord has made. That comes from Psalm 118:24. This is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. Joy is mentioned over 240 times in the Bible, and happiness only 20. Notice that verse does not say we will be happy in it. We will be glad in it. If you're living to be happy, you're missing something. Be joyful. Have joy in all things. This will make the rest of your days the best of your days. Here's another verse from a list that you can pick up that I brought with me as a handout. This one is a key to helping you have the best years yet. It's from James 1:5. If you need wisdom, ask our generous God. He will give it to you. He will not rebuke you for asking. I do not live in the past by comparing it to the present, and I do not live in the future, hoping that the future will be better than today. Ted Engstrom, in his book, which we happen to have in the library over at Park Gables, The Most Important Thing a Man Needs to Know About the Rest of His Life, states, it is only to the degree that you are able to enjoy the present, think about that, at present moments of life that you will be able to enjoy the future. I'm on a personal adventure towards the best years of my life. My youngest son, who of course is quite a number of years younger than I, started saying something a few years ago that I thought was kind of cute. As time went by and I kept hearing him say it, I started saying that statement to my family and friends on their birthday. I came to realize, actually fairly recently, that this way of talking was not about the past and it wasn't about the future. And if you take it to heart, and you have to have the faith to believe that it can be, ask the Holy Spirit to help you do it. It can be done. What did my son say? It was so simple. This is the best day of my life. He said it day after day after day. So I say to you, have the best day of your life. There's still hours left today to do it. And if you can't bring yourself to saying it tonight, say it tomorrow or the next day. I'll be walking the halls, as some of you know. And I plan to say, have the best day of your life.
You sit for that long and you creak when you get up. Tempus fugit, where does time go? Many of us in our pre-retirement years found ourselves fighting the clock. There was never time to catch up. At home, there were mouths to feed, clothes to wash and fold, gardens to tend, constant attention to childhood illnesses and personal hygiene, homework assistance, transportation to school and other events, repeat, repeat. Every workplace setting had its pressures. Floyd Miller, one of my neighbors in Park Place, tells me that 900 dairy cows don't take weekends or holidays off. Students have more reading demands to do, tests coming up, papers that are due pronto. Teachers have lessons and lectures to prepare, those student papers to grade, and college professors their own demands to publish or perish in their fight for tenure. Personal worth seems to be tied up directly into productivity and accomplishment. Hobbies, leisure activities, not much time for those. For many persons with retirement, time takes on a different dimension. We're not so schedule driven. Thanks to Carolyn Nallen, my friend sitting over here, She told me of the wife who said to her husband one morning, "What are you planning to do today?" "Nothing," he replies. "Well, that's what you did yesterday," she said. "Yes, I know," he responded, "but I didn't get finished." But then time may begin to drag. So often, personal worth seems to be linked to productivity and accomplishment. But with more optional time at our age, with more optional time available to us, we can choose opportunities for personal growth, and not to choose is to stagnate. Now permit me a couple of personal references regarding how I experienced the passing days. I will say that Ray and I were given a copy of the outline that our folks were using this evening, and we saw that that was so complete, we felt we had the option to either respond to that in its completeness or go into our own personal experience a little bit. So here we go, about 2 more minutes worth. Permit me a couple of personal references regarding how I experience the passing days. Physically, I've enjoyed participation in the Wellness Center here at BMRC. First as a member from the outside community for 15 years, and then for the last 3 years as a resident here. Quoting from the Wellness Center brochure, "It's one of the best things, best places on campus to conveniently and meaningfully keep giving, keep living, keep going, and keep growing. The VMRC Wellness Center is cozy enough to make you feel like you're among a supportive family, but large enough to feature all the health and wellness services and state-of-the-art equipment you'd expect. We welcome persons of all fitness levels and abilities. Wellness Center staff is professional, knowledgeable, and certified. Each member of our team holds a 4-year degree in a relevant health field, plus each staff member is naturally compassionate about helping and passionate about what they do." I thought of that because I feel like the Wellness Center here is one of the more underused facilities that we have on our campus here. I won't say more, I'll just lay that on you. Now, a couple of observations on the mental, social, spiritual growth part. For the last 12 years, I've been blessed to be part of a book club. 4 or 5 of us, 2 participants have gone on to glory. First, Truman Brunk, and then he was replaced with Wayne North, and these have both gone on from us. But we meet the same group, reading the same book every 4 or 5 weeks. We then meet together to discuss the book and to pick our choice for the next read. Our range of reading fields have included novels, ancient to recent history, biographies and autobiographies, theological works, biblical commentaries, and current political works. Along with our discussions of over 120 books during this time, I've profited from a social and spiritual bonding with my fellow participants as we share and support each other in the challenges of aging and growing disabilities. Note once again, as compared to the driven schedules experienced in our working years, it's a privilege to have more options to choose how we use our time. In this respect, I'm having a growing awareness of the rich potential of more time and depth in biblical study. I feel that I'm growing as I'm also learning to lean. In closing, a few words from the prophet Isaiah on our theme this evening, "Make the rest of your days the best of your days." Quoting from Isaiah, He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young shall utterly fall, but those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Even to your old age and gray hairs, I am he. I am he who will sustain you. I have made you, and I will carry you. I will sustain you, and I will rescue you.
We have just a few minutes remaining, but we will take some questions. We'll invite the respondents and the presenters to take a seat in the front. And while that's happening, let me make a couple comments. Over here on the side table, Idella will be there after we close, and this is her book entitled He Knows the Way. And you can purchase that. It's an interesting read, I promise you. And so I've encouraged you to do that. Ray commented about the scriptures. There's a sheet of paper there that lists some of the passages that he referred to. So you can pick up one of those. That's on this table on the side. Elva, where are you? Oh, in the back, there will be also this. We'll put it on the podium that's back there, so you can get it there. Okay, questions here first. No? Questions or comments in the middle? Are you scratching your nose or do you have a question? You're scratching your nose. Do you have any questions over here? Comments? Yes, here's one. Please identify yourself and then ask your question.
John Burrell. One, I felt like it was an exceptionally good presentation. Far different than I was expecting. I was expecting a to-do list on what I should do on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, which I am thankful you didn't provide. My question is it possible to get a copy of your outline, your slides, electronically or on paper, either way?
And the answer is?
Yes.
I had to ask her first
to make sure that she agreed.
Question, comment over here.
Actually, I think Richard said that he might be making something available. I'm not sure what form that will take and whether it's what you want or not. But between us and Richard, yes.
Do you want to comment, Richard?
I'm trying to learn how to get my audio and put it online. So if everything has worked, I should have audio from tonight. The difficulty in putting something like the PowerPoint up is copyright issues with images and with the video. Technically, if I put those on the web, I'm breaking the copyright law, unless I have permissions.
The images that we used, we had permission to use.
Yeah.
Except maybe not. For the PowerPoint, yeah. But not the DVD.
Okay. If that happens, we'll
see what.
We'll try to make it available. But also, I do have a copy of the PowerPoint and can send that. Other questions here? That's a good question group. They've got one question. Over here. Question, comment. Will, anyone, last chance. Before, yes, Richard.
Richard Bowman, I just, can't leave this audience discussion without having an audience discussion. Elsie and I tried to move into communion, apparently, as you too, at an earlier stage in our life, maybe than some other people. And I feel very, very positive about that until occasionally, I haven't said this to Elsie yet, but just occasionally I'm walking down the hall and I say, but can I do this for another 15 or 20 years? Have you all gotten to that? And how should I handle that? Or just not ask that question?
Idella was ready to go long before I was. We moved just a little over a year ago, March 16, a year ago, we moved to Landis Homes. And I think I could live there easily for the rest of my life. It took me a while to get used to it. We had a lot of dialogues back and forth until we were both ready. One of the things Idella said that really made the difference for me was she wants to go before one of us has to do it by ourselves. For one or the other of us to be left with that task would just be pretty daunting. And in fact, it was a bigger task than we expected. But one of the reasons that rang true for me is the Guillain-Barré syndrome that I had was actually triggered by having gotten the swine flu shot many years earlier, which at that time they gave me the live virus. So I still have that virus in my system. And when I got the shot, I was sick for about a month and unable to work, but regained my health, regained my strength, forgot about it until many years later when I was under a tremendous amount of stress. My immune system took a dip, the virus took over, and then I was totally paralyzed. I had 30% of my lung capacity left. Even my innards had quit grumbling. So I was pretty far. And so I know that that can recur. I could be paralyzed tomorrow. I'm not likely to be. Being at Landis Homes, being in a retirement community, actually is less stressful than prior to being there. And I did not want to be paralyzed all of a sudden, and now she has the problem of putting me there. But it's not a chore being there. We have been very warmly welcomed, much more than we expected, and are enjoying it.
Okay, well, we have just a few moments left. I'm going to ask one question for each one. We'll start over here with Roland, give him the mic. I'd like to have you just share with us, if you would, briefly, less than a minute, what is one major joy that you've been experiencing the last couple days? Or, no, just do the joy.
My, I need more time to think. Ray, you're on.
Okay, we'll come back to you.
Well, my joy has been you.
Okay.
That's it. That's why I came here.
Well, not you, but your brothers and sisters in Pennsylvania, all right? But one of my major joys has been that I had prayed before we came to Landis Homes, that I had led Bible studies before, and I just said, Lord, if the door opens, you know, I would be very happy to be a part of another one, assuming I would be a participant. But the chaplains asked if I would facilitate a women's Bible study. I assumed there would be maybe 10 or 20 ladies. Well, 65 signed up. And so it has just been a joy to see these women go deeper in their relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ.
I'll keep mine short. I love spring. Okay, seeing all the flowers and things getting green.
Back to Roland.
I am so glad for the support services that VMRC represents. I have power of attorney as the nearest relative for my aunt, who some of you may know, Martha Wisson. She's 105. She lives down in Burkholder House. She's still kind of with it most days, including today. And to have the continuum of services that we have here is just a real blessing. And one reason that it was easy for us to make, for me, easier than maybe for my wife, to make the transition here was because of the awareness of the possibility for transition from one part of the services to another. And that's a daily reassurance for me.
Let's show our appreciation one more time to these people. We have 2 minutes remaining, enough time to sing a dismissal song. What a fellowship, what a joy divine, leaning on the everlasting arms. Would you join me?
What a fellowship, what a joy divine, leaning on the everlasting arms. What a blessedness, what a peace is mine, leaning on the everlasting arms.
Don't forget there's some books over here you might want to purchase, and don't forget Ray's scriptures. They're in the back and also in the front.
pick up the cape.
Thank you.